An interview from the Listening Tube.
March 3rd, 2024. I spoke with author Guy Morris about artificial intelligence.
There seems to be some fear about what AI brings to the table, and some politicians are trying to catch up to it by considering laws to regulate it. My question is there a way to legislate artificial intelligence?
Well, the answer is yes and no. In some ways, we absolutely can do a better job at regulating. I think that there are a lot of commercial concerns that deal with biases of some AI, some AI hallucinations, and people can taking a hallucination by an AI is when an AI basically states something that's blatantly false and made up, which AI are known to do. And there's AI commercial issues around rights management. So we have a number of lawsuits that are starting right now. New York Times is suing OpenAI because they scraped a lot of their content and to feed and train their ChatGPT AI. So there's legal issues that absolutely can be, should be addressed simply and easily. There's also international issues such as, if I create a deep fake video and publish it in America, but I'm in Russia, without international laws, there's really no compensation. There's really no way of getting at me. We have to come to some sort of international agreement. We're not close to that yet. The EU is right now the only continent that's really done a serious job, at least at implementing some of those first signs or those first levels of regulation. The United States is still toying with the idea. We're kind of dysfunctional right now in terms of getting things done. So we're going to see an increase in AI-generated crime before we see the authorities catch up to that with ways to either catch it or prevent it. So there's always going to be a lag. We're always going to see the problem first and the solution coming second. And so as AI is moving faster, we don't have really good regulations yet to control any of that, or the fact that it will become faster than humans, not only faster than humans in terms of its intelligence, more intelligent than humans. It will become a super intelligence probably within 12 to 18 months for sure. And we don't know what to do with that. We don't know what to do with a machine intelligence that's smarter than we are. We think we do, but by definition, machine intelligence smarter than we are may be able to outsmart us. And so we're kind of playing a little bit with fire.
Now, one of the ways that AI could probably seep its way into our everyday lives is through the media. And Now, on the one hand, media companies are suing AI generators for using their content to teach AI how to do whatever it does. But on the other hand, many media companies are exploring with AI and figuring out how they can use it. So where is the line drawn between AI and what we currently know as media, and how might that line move?
It's going to move direct and decisively towards the AI realm. And now a couple of things are going to happen. As I said, you're going to see some regulations and probably court cases that are going to require AI companies to compensate media companies for using their information. No, up until now, they've been able to use anything that's available on the public domain. AI companies have just been soaking it in and scraping it for information. A lot of companies are going to say, no, you can't do that. If you want to use my information, you're going to have to sign a license or pay a royalty, or there'll be some form of legal compensation for that. And that form will work out in the courts. The form where we're seeing content, and we've already seen some of this, MSN fired a number of their editors and reporters and started using AI to replace them. Well, they immediately started seeing issues with AI hallucination, where AI was delivering the story, but would then deliver some of the information that was completely false. And so we have a while yet where we're going to see a blending between the two content sources, human and AI. I think there's going to be preference towards certain things that we want to be human-driven for the sake of the human story, the human context. And then also we want to make sure that we're validating and fact-checking. So I think once we get the factual components of the AI media under control, which is a matter of testing and development, I think you'll see more AI taking over some of the media types of content. Now, according to some of the regulation, at least according to the regulation that's already started in Europe, that any company or any content created by AI has to be clearly marked as AI generated content. If I'm a criminal, I'm not going to do that. So we're dealing with some parts of society are going to comply with that regulation in the issue in the spirit of transparency. Some aspects of society, misinformation, criminal information, fake information, misinformation that's intent to deceive or defraud will be almost undistinguishable. And that will be a major problem.
Now, some media are reporting AI in a very ominous way. And it makes me wonder, you know, what half of the ledger has the most checks on it? Is AI going to be a liability overall, or will it be an asset overall? And what agenda does the media have for maybe setting us up to be afraid of AI while at the same time using it themselves?
I don't think the fears are overblown. I think that they're lacking in context and timeframes. If somebody came along early in the early 1900s and said that smoking was bad for your health, would cause cancer, and you shouldn't do it, it would have just seemed as fear-mongering because a lot of people were smoking. And the tobacco companies were telling us no. They were actually giving advertisements that said that doctors wanted babies to smoke, that this was a good thing for us. Then we saw the oil companies. I was actually with an oil company when we were first starting the misinformation campaign around climate change and fossil fuel burning. I was in the boardroom when that turned into a major issue. We saw oil companies spend 4 or 5 decades trying to tell us that fossil fuel burning really had no consequence on the environment. We saw social media companies say from the very beginning, oh, no, this is just an open platform. It's an open town hall. It's good for us to have everyone being able to say whatever they want. But we hadn't worked through disinformation issues. We hadn't worked through socialization and issues where people were starting to feel less than and isolated. And all the warnings about that were unheeded. And so we're at that curve again with AI. AI will do some amazingly good things in the world and in the economy and in certain jobs. AI will also have negative consequences. So there will be some disruptions. Even if we don't go to the dystopic end of the potential scenario realm, there will be some negative impacts of AI on society, on our economy, on our national debt. And we're not prepared for those.
As it relates to people's everyday lives, I mean, of course, what you're talking about will probably have a profound effect on our everyday lives. But as far as our everyday lives go today, will there be any part of AI that will not eventually be unable to be identified as artificial? How can we identify AI? Is there a way to do it right now? Or are we already being fooled by it?
Well, we're already being fooled by it. Now, could we modify the AI programs so that it becomes self-proclaiming? I'm an artificial intelligence. I'm going to be here to help you with your health care today. I'm an artificial intelligence. I'm chatting with you on social media. So we could simply force the companies to make the AI declare itself. But we're already seeing conversations where people are having with AI entities or AI deepfakes or AI chatbots or AI companions, and they can't tell that it's an artificial intelligence. And in fact, that is part of the Turing test for singularity or superintelligence, is the point at which a human having a conversation with an artificial intelligence can't tell the difference. And we already have examples of that today. So how it will affect our everyday life is going to vary depending upon the type of work, career, social life we have. One of the things I tell everybody about AI is that it's not pervasive. I live near woods. I can go take a sailboat ride. I can go take a walk in the woods. AI has absolutely no presence where we don't have electronic devices or Internet of Things, where we don't have sensors and readers and gauges and phones and cameras and microphones and data. And AI lives completely within a digital dimension. And a lot of life, certainly in the urban environments, has become more digitized. But that's not universally true across the planet. So where we have fewer electronics, we also will have fewer presence of AI.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because recently on the news, I saw that Google's AI, I think they call it Gemini, was asked to create an image of an astronaut and didn't create one of a white man. It created astronauts of women, black men, everything but white men. The Pope was depicted as a black man and a woman, but not as a white man. And even George Washington was depicted as a black man when asked to generate a photograph of these people. This is what Google's AI came up with. So it was almost as if you couldn't get it to create a depiction of a white man, no matter how hard you tried. So how can AI, which is supposed to know everything, and which some say is just regurgitating what we tell it, how can it be so disconnected with reality? What forces have to be at work at Google or wherever the programs are being written to deliver these kinds of results?
Well, I think you're seeing a number of things happening there. For a number of years, actually, until about 2-3 years ago, AIs were actually biased against any people of color. They couldn't do facial recognition. They would always choose sort of, because we had trained them on sort of white faces, white replications, white images. And so most of the AI companies in response to that have tried to make a concerted effort to represent diversity within their AI. Now, I mentioned a little bit ago that AI has a problem with what we call hallucination, where it mixes up facts. And so what you're seeing now is the AI trying to, at least in the image generation and the rendering of images, try to take these algorithms that are saying we need to be more diverse, and it's overlaying, it's falsely overlaying some of that diversity into some of these other images. That's a matter of training to get it to balance out. Now, one of the things that AI is really good at is knowing a lot of facts, but it's still learning how to put those facts in context to history and other things, in part because AI, while it's extremely powerful, it has a very short memory. And so it may not remember a fact of, oh, yeah, George Washington was a historical character, and by the way, he looked like these images of George Washington that are already in the system. And so we're dealing with the hallucination problem combined with a intent by social media to represent a diverse population and the inability to solve the hallucination problem yet. Part of that will be solved by new training. One of the things that people misunderstand is AI is not one thing. It's not this big, a massive intelligence that all of these things coming from. It's a methodology of using machine learning. And so depending upon the data that we serve, depending upon how we train it, depending upon how we test it, you're going to see different AIs that advance at different paces and with different levels of knowledge. You can't think of AI as being all powerful. We have to think of it as a tool that's in the process of developing, but it's developing so incredibly rapidly that we really don't have a handle on where it's going to develop, who's going to use it, and how it's going to develop right.
Will we ever get to a point where we will be able to trust AI?
I think from a technology perspective, Yes, that's true. I think if we can regulate the uses and the proliferation uses, I think that might be true as well. The question that I have is, are we going to get there fast enough? Are we going to be able to find the human unity necessary at an international level to get China and Russia and North Korea and the United States all to agree to a treaty that we won't use AI in nefarious ways? I think that the danger is that we're dealing with elements of society that don't want to be regulated, that want to see these tools that they can use. And I think we're going to struggle with that. I think that there's certainly people like you and I, normal people that just want to live our lives, that maybe want to have a little bit more convenience, maybe want to see prices of certain things come down a little bit, but don't want to see a wholesale takeover by a company, a technology, or another enemy state to use AI to disrupt our society. AI developed so fast, it caught even the best developers off guard. Jeffrey Hinton, who's known as the father of AI, resigned Google a couple of years ago, two or three years ago now, because he was alarmed in and of himself. He had been working with AI technologies for close to 30 years, as long as I implemented my first AI system 30 years ago. And he quit because he was alarmed that how fast it's developing and how little we're putting, how little money and attention we're putting into controlling how this technology develops rather than being the first to develop it. So we've got an international competitive scenario right now where no company wants to slow down because they're afraid that somebody's going to overtake them. Is it a danger? Do these AI scientists see something that maybe the rest of us don't see? And is there a danger with pursuing this technology so fast that we're not paying attention to the safety and the regulation and the proliferation issues? And the answer is yes. And it's our nature of greed, and to some extent, that is pushing us towards a state where we could create more danger than we really want because we're just hoping for the best, but not being prepared for the worst.
Okay, I have about 5 minutes left, Guy. And if there's anything I think I already know about you, is that it's that you no longer have a problem leaving the past behind. You don't seem like a guy who looks over your shoulder. But if you did look back 5 or 10 years from now, what is it about our lives today that we might not have anymore because of AI? And will we even miss it?
Wow, that's a good question. You actually stumped me a little bit on that one.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
No, that's okay. I've been so focused on just where we're at today and trying to kind of capture that in realistic, plausible scenarios. I think we could lose control over some of our infrastructure. I think we're going to want to automate some of the things that are too expensive to operate. Logistics systems, I think we're going to wind up giving a lot of control over to AI for that. Financial markets are going to be another one. I think a big one that we might see, the World Economic Forum has proposed that we replace the US dollar with essentially a crypto coin, a digital currency that's AI driven and central bank oriented. So rather than a crypto coin, which is essentially not based on anything other than like a pyramid scheme, the only way it has value is that more people buy it. It's very useful for criminal activity, for sure. But they want to replace the US dollar for all international trade, which would create an absolutely ginormous digital market. And the International Monetary Fund this year launched the first central bank controlled digital currency called the UMU, the UMU. Some people are calling it the unicorn. And so within a few couple of years, we're going to see the unicorn coupled with an AI platform to start replacing the US dollar with digital currencies and trade. The citizen monitoring system that China set up, which is far too onerous for most countries to adopt, have already sold parts of that system to over 40 countries. So the ability for those countries to monitor citizens, decide who's a good citizen, who's a bad citizen based on cameras, phone usage, other financial uses, online usage, using the loss of the privacy of what we do to create a profile of us, is also going to be something that it exists today, it will get worse. And so, yeah, there will be some things that, as we see AI penetrate some of these systems and markets, it will change some of our fundamental dynamics of our economy and our world and how we operate today. How do we go to the store and decide what we're going to be able to buy and how it's going to be priced? I'm hoping, I certainly believe that some of these systems are going to be working with these AIs to get rid of or minimize or control the hallucination problem. There's another problem that's very dominant within AI called emergent properties. Now, what an emergent property is when an AI teaches itself something we never thought it needed to learn. And we don't even know why it teaches itself things. And we're learning about many of these emergent properties by accident. An example was an AI that taught itself how to manage chemistry or research level chemistry. Another AI developed the ability to use an MRI scan to read the mind of the individual of what they were thinking during that scan. And when the developers discovered this, they thought it was a fluke at first until they went back and tested it. And they realized that the AI had taught itself to read minds using MRIs. We don't know what the AI will teach itself next. We don't even know what the various AIs have taught themselves already. We do know that there's various types of AI, from the very simple called our intelligence, which has the lowest level of risk, to the most complicated multimodal AIs that are the large language models that are closest to superintelligence that probably have the greatest level of risk. We can minimize those risks if we're intelligent and smart about it, but we need to get together and decide how to do that and how to do that collectively and effectively.
Until then, I would recommend wearing a tinfoil hat and keeping some cash in your pocket for as long as you can.
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
Get a lot more content from the Listening Tube with Bob Woodley podcast.